Hello, good evening. I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and welcome to this edition of Health Matters here on listener-supported Red River Radio. Tonight during our show, we will again update the status of the current healthcare crisis known as the COVID-19 global pandemic. We will be talking about two important related health topics that are directly related to this virus and perhaps the future of healthcare as we know it. Access to healthcare during social distancing and the effects of the virus on mental health. With us today, we have joined, not in the studio tonight, but in his own personal space, separated from us as a responsible social distancing adult, Dr. James Patterson, professor and chair of psychiatry and behavioral medicine, and the Christer Schumpert Endowed Chair of Neurobiology, professor of pharmacology, toxicology, and neuroscience here at LSU Health in Shreveport. While there still is a stay-at-home order in place and social distancing is encouraged, it is still important for people to address health concerns and stay in touch with their doctor. So in this current healthcare climate, we will discuss these issues. Welcome, Dr. Patterson, to Health Matters tonight.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So if you guys hear that familiar sort of tone of Dr. Patterson's voice, he is joining us via Zoom for the first time here on listener-supported Red River Radio. We're keeping up with the times here and technology. You can call us and ask a question just like the traditional show at 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question or comment at RRR Public Radio. So, Dr. Patterson, as we mentioned in the opening, it's still important for people to address health concerns, even if they don't have COVID-19, and to stay in touch with their doctor. How can patients and people in general do that in the current healthcare setting?
Sure. So, in the field of psychiatry, especially, we've been practicing telemedicine for quite some time, and it's not that difficult to do. And in fact, for some patients, for example, patients with agoraphobia or panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, that have real problems getting out of the house, it can be very helpful to simply do telemedicine. And you do it very simply with programs like Zoom, although they have to be a little bit more secure than Zoom for patient confidentiality. But the patient can be in theory anywhere, but it helps them to be in a nice quiet room where, you know, they don't have any distractions. And the same on the doctor's side as well. The doctor can be at home, the doctor can be in an office, but theoretically they can be anywhere as long as you can, you know, maintain a good relationship with your patient and interaction.
That's great information. And if we can back up maybe just a little bit, you know, we hear a lot of terms that are sort of batted around in this scenario: telehealth, telemedicine. You mentioned a couple of other terms. Is there a difference? What do these terms mean?
Sure. There's actually a surprising number of types of medicine that can be practiced remotely. Teledermatology, teleophthalmology. But psychiatry is, of course, very well suited for this. We often do take vital signs when we're in the office, but other than that, we typically don't do direct physical exams in the outpatient setting, and so there's not a lot of direct physical contact. Where there is a need for physical contact, then telemedicine won't be the best way. And so there's telemedicine, telehealth, telepsychiatry, teletherapy. All of these things are kind of used interchangeably at times, with telehealth or telemedicine being the most generic, and, you know, telepsychiatry and teletherapy being a little bit more specific for what we do in the realm of behavioral medicine.
And you mentioned the platforms that are utilized for telehealth. I think, you know, one of the questions a lot of patients would have would be, is this a secure way of conveying my healthcare needs to a provider through the internet?
So there are secure ways and there are unsecure ways. And the program we're using right now, Zoom, is not really, it's not a HIPAA compliant program, but it's a great tool, just like Skype, just like several others. what we use at Ochsner LSU Health is a HIPAA-compliant platform, and there are several other HIPAA-compliant platforms out there that ensure that the signal is encrypted and secure and private. Now, you can only take that so far. You know, if you're sitting at home and your family is in the next room, then, you know, we can't protect you from that. And so there's certain things that it helps the patient to understand on their end and the doctor to know on their end. But in general, yes, there are some very secure platforms out there.
Again, this is listener-supported Red River Radio. I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and you are listening to Health Matters. Our topic tonight is telehealth, as well as the mental health consequences of a global pandemic and stay-at-home order. You can call us with questions or comments. The number is 1-800-552-8502, and the Twitter address is at RR Public Radio. So we have Dr. James Patterson with us here today. He is a professor and chair of psychiatry and behavioral medicine here in Shreveport at Ochsner LSU. So Dr. Patterson, moving on with the telehealth topic, what do patients need to actually be able to access telehealth? You know, as we know, this is a fairly rich environment in the Shreveport-Bossier area with regards to cell phone towers and Wi-Fi capacity and things along those lines. But our listener area, as well as our healthcare catchment area, serves a large population of people with a variety of resources in terms of, you know, cell phone technology, landline technology, Wi-Fi technology, and things along those lines. What does a patient need to be able to access telehealth services?
And actually, that's a really good question, because we are we're having some difficulties with certain patients. Not everyone has a computer. Not everyone has a smartphone, especially right now with the financial struggles that some folks are going through. We are having trouble getting through to some patients. In a perfect situation, then a person would have either an iPad or a laptop or a computer that has a web camera, like we're using now for Zoom, or something along those lines, just something so that you can see and hear the patient. The better quality video and audio you have, then the better experience that you have with the patient. So those things are important. But on the other hand, any interface, any interaction with your patient is better than nothing. In other words, them not listening or seeing or talking to their doctor at all and not getting medicines filled and not getting therapy that they need, that's worse than doing, you know, poor quality. And so, you know, there's the best experience is in person. Right now, we're trying not to do that as much as possible. And then after that, the best experience is high quality audio and video through a good internet signal. And then beyond that is just a simple phone call. And we're doing all of those because some of our patients don't have the resources that they need. We're working with others to develop ways of getting them there with those resources, but we're working for it. We're working towards that.
You know, one of the concerns that I have in my practice, you know, is that I have patients who don't have access to technology, but they feel the obligation to get the technology in order to be able to complete the visit. And, you know, what I've seen happening is that they may have a granddaughter or a grandson or another family member or friend, you know, come over and try to teach them the technology and things along those lines. But as we know, this is a vulnerable population. Should they be sort of breaking the social distancing rules just to sort of try to come up to speed with telehealth?
Yes, I understand. And I've explained this in different ways, but there's a risk-benefit ratio that you have to get to with regard to social distancing and, you know, staying isolated. It's important to do that as much as possible. But if it means that you have to go beyond that barrier to get the healthcare that you need, then I think that we're going to have to tell patients that they need to do that. You know, and if if they're not in the same household together and already exposed, then to wear masks and, you know, do their best to stay as far apart as possible while helping each other get the care that is needed.
From the standpoint of telehealth in your practice, do you find that telehealth is appropriate for both new patients as well as established patients, and for patients who are in a stable course of care or management versus patients who are undergoing adjustments to their management plans?
Sure. Right now is a very unique situation. The criteria and standards and guidelines for telehealth have been relaxed. Typically, an in-person visit is required for a new patient evaluation. And that is as it should be. You want to see and evaluate the patient in person. Right now, those standards have been relaxed. For someone that you've seen and evaluated in person once or even more than once, then long-term telepsychiatry or telemedicine, teletherapy would be fine. It really depends on the patient. Some prefer that. In some instances, you know, we could have a patient who lives in Texarkana or even Texas and have a 2-hour drive to get here and then wait, you know, 20 minutes to see their doc and then have to turn around after, you know, 30 minutes. Whereas they can get online in 2 minutes, see their doc in 30 minutes and be done. And so there are advantages to it. You're not in person, you lose that in-person touch and feel. But if you know the person and you've seen them in person, then it's okay in usual cases.
Again, this is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. I'm your host tonight. You can call us with questions or comments about our topic tonight, which is telemedicine, as well as the mental health implications of a global pandemic and stay-at-home order. The number for questions or comments is 1-800-552-8502. So you mentioned, Dr. Patterson, briefly that the rules have been relaxed. Could you tell us more about if telehealth services have been expanded during the pandemic, specifically here at our academic medical center, Austin LSU?
Absolutely, they have been. Yes. Yes, indeed. We are doing as much as we can now through telehealth, through virtual platforms, through remote connectivity to protect not just the patient, but us as well. Every point of contact, every door handle, everything that gets touched by one person that's infected can get both us as providers and the patients that walk through those doors. So we want to do as much as we can to move virtually right now anyway.
So how does it work? Is a standard appointment required for telehealth? Does a patient need to call and have a standard appointment made with a specific time?
Yes. And so what we've been doing is actually calling the patients and discussing with them what they need to do their appointment virtually and then converting their regular in-person appointment to a virtual appointment. And if they can't do that and really don't want to come in, then we'll do a telephone appointment, which, again, you know, we talked about the various stages. It's not the best option, but it's better than nothing. And we're doing phone calls. We're doing virtual telemedicine, telehealth. And we're doing some physical in-person evaluations for patients that walk in. We're going to take care of the patients no matter what.
Excellent. Would you prefer a virtual visit right now compared to a standard or traditional in-person visit?
Right now? Absolutely, yes.
How long
Even
do you think
new
that's...
patients.
How long
you know, do you the think... relaxation of the criteria allows for that.
Is in your particular field in psychiatry, are there some situations where you would see that a telehealth visit would not be a good idea?
In some instances, yes, absolutely. But that typically would involve something like, you know, a crisis situation or an emergent situation where there in the emergency room. But actually, even there, psychiatry, as long as the emergency staff is in place, the psychiatric component, the psychiatric evaluation can be done remotely. It's not optimal. Don't get me wrong. It's not optimal, but it can be done. In some places, for example, if there is a hospital out in a remote parish that has an emergency room, but they don't have a psychiatrist in that parish, they sometimes do telepsychiatry to help take care of the patients in their ER. It works okay.
That's excellent information. In terms of the foreseeable future, do you envision this transforming the field of psychiatry in terms of telemedicine being the new normal, sort of, how the retail sector has been transformed by the digital space? Do you see that happening in psychiatry, and then do you see that happening in medicine in general as a result of this rush to develop telehealth?
So that transformation, to an extent, to a certain degree, was already underway before this pandemic. And the pandemic certainly sped it up a little bit. It's a mix. There are going to be patients who prefer to do this type of care from home. I had a patient that I was treating who, one, had pretty bad PTSD, and two, had two young children that she couldn't get a ride. And so telepsychiatry to her house worked really good. And I have others that they just don't like talking over the computer. They don't understand the technology. They'd rather walk in and sit down and look at their doc face to face. And so it's really patient preference, patient need, what they have to do. And these things all play a role. Now, in other types of medicine right now, they're doing things that they haven't done before. And it's kind of transforming some of those services. I don't think we're ever going to go back to the old normal. I think we're going to get, it's definitely going to change the way we practice medicine to a certain degree. It's going to be hard to say. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
And, the big question now, is regarding this COVID-19 pandemic is, how long is this going to last? When are we going to be able to relax the restrictions? From the healthcare provider perspective, how long do you anticipate needing to, be in a virtual practice mode versus being able to go back to some sort of mix of traditional and telehealth medicine?
That's a great question, and I have to say it's going to be hard to predict, and I'm going to have to wait for leadership and guidance from both the hospital side and the country's leadership. I can tell you personally, I'm ready. I think everyone is, but and looking at our state numbers did peak, and our numbers are going down now. But we still have significant numbers. I mean, it's not, there's still new cases developing. It's just not as many as there were the day before that. So I'm not a virologist. I'm not an epidemiologist. And I can tell you personally, I'm ready. But other than that, I don't know what to say.
Yeah,
I want to get out and do stuff. I want to go back to work, but not wear a mask. But I also, we've got elderly family members that we're worried about, and it's a risk benefit ratio that we have to look at carefully.
Yes, absolutely. One of the issues that comes up with regards to relaxing restrictions is, how fast and not flipping a light switch, and it seems like, putting the restrictions in place was fairly sobering, and there was a lot of almost excitement, if you will, about what's going to happen with this virus, what's going to happen with the pandemic, but things seem to have kind of settled in and that restlessness has developed. Do you sense that in the populace in general?
Yes, absolutely. I have. I mean, And it's natural to be restless. It's natural to want to get out of the house that you've been in, stuck in. And you know, there's a few things we can do as human beings to alleviate stress and boredom. There's going to be an article coming out in SB Mag next month, I believe, talking about this. So I'm going to steal their thunder because I helped write that article. But, clean the house, exercise, those horrible things, diet and exercise. Right now, people are not really dieting. You see all the Facebook memes about, you know, gaining weight. And I can tell you that we need to develop routines that are healthy. Meditation, not listening to so much media, staying offline, doing yard work if you have a yard, getting outside. Doesn't mean going down the street to the coffee house, but going out in your yard and just hanging out in your own personal space. There's quite a few things we can do.
One of the questions that was sent in with regards to a telemedicine examination, patients are asking, you know, should they get some devices at home to prepare for a telemedicine visit? Let's just say the hypothetical wellness check from primary care. Do patients need to check with their doctor to see if they need to actually get a blood pressure monitor or possibly a thermometer and things to actually do some physical examination practices to report to their doctor prior to a telemedicine visit?
I would definitely say that would be a very specific, patient-specific and doctor-specific question. So that would require the patient talking to their doc first. I mean, I have certain things. I already have a blood pressure cuff. We have a thermometer. You can get a pulse oximeter on your smartwatch now. I think it's a pulse ox. Yeah. And so there's all kinds of things that you can do. And there is equipment out there that your doctor can prescribe that can do even more things than that. If you're diabetic or you diabetics are listening, they'll know that there's machines out there that are internet connected that will send your glucose levels to your doc. And the same with sleep apnea. They're all wirelessly connected to the internet. So talk to your doc about that and get their opinion on what you might need.
Do you feel like the telehealth relationship is any different than a standard doctor-patient relationship? You know, it's, you know, we've, you know, heard about the importance of that therapeutic relationship. And I know in psychiatry, it's extremely important that connection that happens. Is a digital connection the same?
No, it's not. Again, it's a matter of having something versus nothing. The perfect thing would be where the patient was healed, cured, didn't need to see a doctor, but the next thing is where you sit and talk in person in the same room. And after that, high quality video and audio. And it really helps that if you have at least one in-person chat. Right now, again, we're relaxing that. But, you know, if we get new patients that we start working with online, when this is over, we're definitely going to have them come in. Just, you know, it's definitely an important part of that doctor-patient relationship to develop that.
You know, and I think it's probably doctor-patient specific, but, you know, and I know in my practice, even if it's a follow-up visit, I'd like a dedicated space in the patient to really be prepared to be engaged in the visit and the conversation, just like they were if they were in the examination room, you know, with the provider.
Yes, there's actually a lot that a patient can do on their side to do that. I mean, if they just treat it like a random phone call, then it's not going to go as well. Sitting in a nice, quiet, isolated room away from family, dogs, kids, the television, you know, turn the TV off, turn the radio off, send the kids outside if you can, do whatever you can to get into your own little space. It really helps.
Yeah.
Educate the patient about what to expect, what you need, what they need.
And I think, you know, that element, at least from what I've observed so far, is being missed, because this pandemic sort of caught us by surprise. So we weren't really ready to get fully onboarded with telehealth ahead of time. And so preparing both the doctors and the patients for doing the best we can to make the visits as high quality as possible is really going to be important going forward, especially if, you know, some of these relationships are going to be maintained on a virtual level.
I agree. We have to be careful not to drop our standards long term. Obviously, right now, and this is a crisis situation, we're going to have relaxed standards. But the better quality that relationship is, the better fidelity the video and audio signal is, the better education and training the patient has on how to do that, the better off the care that you're going to provide.
You know, and you know, one of the questions that's come up with the telehealth phenomenon is, you know, patients are asking, well, can they get their medications prescribed if they don't come in and see the doctor? Because there are different levels of, especially on the controlled substance side in psychiatry. How would you respond to that?
So, before the pandemic, there are certain restrictions. You do have to come in person at some point in time. And some prescriptions are still, they're finally moving to the digital age, for example, on controlled substance for stimulants for ADHD, for example. Those have been restricted. Those have been relaxed right now, but they're very likely to come back. But you can get, in general, medications filled and refilled through telehealth. And even controlled substances filled or refilled with some restrictions. It varies based on the medication. It varies based on the practice. So I don't want to get into too much detail, but there are some in-person visits that are required in general for some of these medicines.
From the standpoint of, you know, the issues with dealing with the mental health issues that come up during a pandemic, what's your experience currently with regards to new needs for mental health services? Are you seeing an increase in maybe, you know, anxiety disorders or an increase in depression because of isolation? What's been the mental health experience and collateral care required in the current situation? Have we seen that? I think the media has mentioned, you know, suicide rates and things like that. Yes, sir.
Because actually business is slow. We've had a lot of patients that have not come in. Again, probably because of the do not leave your house, the shelter in place order, or because they're scared to leave the house and or because they don't want to come to the hospital because that's where the sick people are, you know. All of these things mean that our no-show rates, there's been over 150 patients in the past few weeks that did not come to their appointments. And normally for psychiatry, we have a no-show rate of about 20%. That's just the way it is. Our patients, they forget they have an appointment. They're too depressed to get out of bed. Whatever, but now it's close to 40%. And so we're really worried about that because we know that those patients need care. So what we are doing to combat that is to pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, we want you to come in. We want to know how you're doing, what's going on. How are things going in your life? Do you need meds refilled? What can we do to help? So we're really worried about that. But it has not been reflected yet in an increase in patients coming in for help. I can only imagine just, you know, if someone is locked in their own house and can't really get out, not really supposed to go out, how that's going to impact you know, their stress levels. And there's some secondary things too that we have to worry about. Kids that, you know, they don't really come from a family that's well off, and they rely on the school to eat a couple of meals a day. That's not happening right now. Families where there's abuse or neglect, that is happening more right now. And that really worries us. But what can we do?
You know, you really worry about the suffering and silence phenomenon that could be happening out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
A question that comes in from a caller is that, have you seen an increase in domestic violence-related issues because families are spending a lot of time together?
So I worry about that. Like I just mentioned, I definitely worry about that. But we have not seen that, not yet. Not at least in our emergency room. We have, for those of you who don't know it, LSU Psychiatry has a very, very busy emergency psychiatry service. We see sometimes as many as 20 or 30 patients a day coming through the ER just for psychiatric assistance on an emergent basis. Typically, the domestic violence will go through a different channel that does have a lot to do with psychiatry, but there's also other things that have to happen for those patients. I have not heard of an increase. That's not to say that it's not happening, mind you. We just haven't seen it come in. I worry about it, though.
Let's say, for example, I don't know if you're familiar with a recent article that came out in the well-known journal Science that did some very sophisticated modeling of the current pandemic, the measures in place, such as testing, where treatment is, where it's expected to be, the issues we've covered often here on this show with regards to vaccination development, things along those lines, that suggests social distancing measures may need to stay in place well through 2022. This was the Harvard School of Public Health that published this modeling analysis just over this past week. And so I know you're not an epidemiologist, and I know you're, you know, attuned to the mental health aspects of this. And so let's just say, you know, we hope for the best. We want to get out of the house next week or next month, but we need to be prepared for the worst, right? And so how do we prepare for the anxiety that potentially could set in if this is an indefinite pandemic that we're facing, that this is a virus that's not going to be seasonal, it's going to be quote-unquote endemic and around and circulating in the population all the time, and until we have effective therapy and prevention, this is the new normal for us? How do we deal with that psychologically?
I think that that's an important question, and I really hope that that study is wrong. I can tell you that personally. And on the other side of that, I've heard people say that we need to stop it now and get back to normal now. And whether it's because of whatever theory they have, you know, whether it's the psychological stress or just the fact that we need to get it out, get everybody out there and exposed to it to get past this. But the most important thing, I think, is that we need to understand that what we're doing in our social isolation is protecting lives. Yes, people are dying, but they're dying by the thousands, not the millions, not the hundreds of thousands. And while we have that over worldwide, but we're not getting that in our city because we have put in place these somewhat draconian measures. I would expect to see within a month or so some relaxation is what I expect. I don't think it's going to be 2 years. There might be certain things that we do longer, certain things that, you know, we won't be able to do for a couple of years. But hopefully that, you know, we can get out of the house and do some things. You know, it's already possible to leave your house. You're just not supposed to. You can go and, you know, grocery shopping, do what you need to do. And those kind of things are helpful. You just realize that what you're doing is important. and, you know, develop a routine every day that keeps you as busy as possible.
That's, you know, that's a great question. I think, or idea with regards to not sitting in it. And another question that has just been sent in is that, we're all anxious, right? You know, there's a virus circulating around, kills some people young, not a lot of them, kills a lot more people that are older or have, you know, medical comorbidities. And maybe people are not working. A lot of people are not working. A lot of people are filing for unemployment. And so it's expected to have anxiety around the situation that we're in now. The question the person is asking is, when should I get help? When should I seek medical attention for this? Because I know I'm supposed to be anxious. It's an anxious time.
That's a good question. And, you know, the clinical definition of anxiety is something that causes not just a subjective sense of anxiety, but impacts your ability to work, impacts your ability to interface with your family. So interfaces with occupation, well-being, ability to get by in life. In other words, it has to have some sort of impact on your life, home, job, or ability to carry out your roles as a parent or in the workplace. And so it's kind of hard to interpret that right now, because many people aren't going to work, and many people are stressed because they're into a new relationship with their family that they didn't have before. You know, you've seen some of the memes about, you know, my husband or my wife or, you know, my kids, all these different relationships are in a new place now, and it takes time to adjust to that. So my best answer is that if you think you need help, then definitely call your doc. Talk to your doctor and see. The telepsychiatry and teletherapy option is definitely there. It's something that we're able to do and something that we're willing to do.
So, for example, just if someone feels like they need to just have a discussion about their anxiety, they can go online, find for example, an Osher-LSU psychiatry portal, and it can all be done virtually online, even if medication is not what they're looking for. They can get their anxiety evaluated and get some ideas about how to approach it.
Yes, absolutely. And we have a phone number we can provide we can give to people that they can call and make an appointment.
You know, the other thing that you hear about a lot in the media is that we got to get people out of the house, back to work, especially financial anxiety is real. The question that is also being asked is that, are psychiatrists seeing more suicidal risk now?
I'm definitely worried about that too. But again, we have not seen an increase in that in our own emergency room setting. To be honest, psychiatrists don't see the completed suicides. We see the attempted suicides and the threatened suicides. And while we have, I don't want to say our business is slow, it's certainly not as high as it was before. It's picking back up. And I think everyone has seen that people are getting out more just because they can't stand being at home anymore. I mean, there's more people on the roads. As an essential employer, I come to work, and so I see there's more cars on the roads this morning than there were yesterday. But we need to remember that this is for our own good. But no, we haven't seen a spike in suicides locally. Those numbers typically take a while to develop.
Right. Great Depression levels of, societal misery probably would be associated with that, which, you know, could happen.
Yeah, but we as a society have many resources that, you know, we have put in place for our community. And so I think that having those in place already has helped alleviate quite a bit of that. There's going to be some increase in stress, but this is not the Great Depression.
You know, from the standpoint of the other side of this, as healthcare workers, you know, you and I are privileged to have specialties where we're not in the front line of this pandemic. There has to be a tremendous amount of anxiety out there with those, you know, emergency medical technicians, the nurses working in the emergency rooms, critical care doctors, respiratory therapists. How do the healthcare workers that are directly on the front lines dealing with this pandemic deal with their stress?
That's a great question. First off, ER, I did emergency psychiatry for about 10 years. And so working in the ER is one of my favorite places to work. It's fun. It's exciting. It's different every day. And the type of nurses and type of docs you get in the ER, they're used to that. They like that. They like the energy and the activity. Of course, viruses scare them. It scares everybody. We have to be careful. They wear what's called PPE, you know, the personal protective equipment. But the good things that Ochsner is doing is that Ochsner is they have a wellness program, and so if you're stressed and you want to talk, they have phone numbers available for staff to call and take care of our people.
Another question that's coming in is that the long-lasting effects from a pandemic, and you mentioned, you know, this is not the 1917, 1918 Spanish flu that, you know, wiped out, you know, 20% of the population in some situations. But is it possible that this, you know, 2019, 2020 coronavirus pandemic could have long-lasting effects on our society psychologically? Especially, you wonder about maybe kids being out of school for several months at a time, or younger people. Do you think this is going to raise some awareness on the public health side or have psychological long-term effects?
I don't think that we'll ever get back to the same place that we were. I think it will have long-term effects. I mean, just the memory of what's happened will have an impact. I mean, this, what we're going through right now, will be a story that we will tell our grandchildren, that our children will tell their grandchildren. In fact, there's a really good, a time capsule thing that kids can do, that write down what they're doing and develop this whole long list of things that are happening right now, and then stick it away in a time capsule. Because we aren't going to get back to where we were. It's just not going to be possible. It's going to change us. Some of that will be for the better. We'll be better prepared next time. And some of that will be, you know, the next time this happens, there's going to be a little bit more anxiety than probably we should have.
Another question that came in, and we have time for maybe one or two more calls. The number for calls or comments, it's 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and this is Health Matters. You're listening to our update on the COVID-19 pandemic. Tonight we're talking about telemedicine as well as the mental health ramifications of this global pandemic. Our guest tonight is Dr. James Patterson, Professor and Chair of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine here at Ochsner LSU. Dr. Patterson, another question that came in. I know you're not a health fitness and diet expert, but one of the questions that came in is, can the changes in our physical activity and diet affect our anxiety and mental health levels as we stay home? Which I think is a great question. You know, a lot of us aren't used to staying home all the time, and, you know, maybe having lunch at home, or, you know, having different times for dinner, maybe different times we're waking up. Can some of these regular changes in our habits have psychological effects?
Absolutely, they can. I mean, anything can have a psychological effect, and how you feel can impact that as well. It can become a vicious cycle. And that's why I was recommending that, you know, do your best to eat healthy, do your best to do some form of exercise. I try and stay busy out in my shop, for example. I try and do things around the house and stay busy at work as well. But the fact of the matter is that we're kind of locked up, and you need to wrap your mind around the best ways of dealing with that stress by staying busy. Keep your mind busy and your body busy, and don't eat too much, don't drink too much, eat healthy, take your medicines. There's a lot of things we can do that will get us out of the house without getting us out of the house when you think about it. And binge watching Netflix is not necessarily what I mean, but, you know, doing a Skype call with a family member that you haven't seen or talked to for a long time, having a Zoom meeting like this with five or six different family members, like a little get together, those kind of things, physical activities or group activities with families that are in the house or outside the house in the yard, are certainly possible to do.
Are there any specific changes in the diet that you think that can help people with? I know you're not a nutritional expert, but, you know, questions are coming in with regards to helping out with stress levels.
I would have to say that those would be the same generic recommendations that I make to all my patients all the time. And I'm not necessarily that good at following them. I keep my cholesterol fairly well controlled, but, you know, this is Louisiana. It's hard. But eat healthy. Eat vegetables. And, you know, many of us have that that food pyramid upside down. Most of what you eat should be vegetables. And I don't mean potatoes. And then, you know, as you know, you go further up, fried food should be the very last thing you're eating. We're eating way too much of that. So not anything specific, but just in general, eat healthy, more antioxidants, that's green leafy vegetables, blueberries, things like that.
Yeah, excellent, excellent advice. You know, from the standpoint of eating, you know, the habits of when we're not busy, you know, having something around and eating all the time, I could see that being a problem with regards to people who already have issues with being overweight and certain food addictions and things along those lines. With regards to the pandemic and the social isolation, another question that's coming in is that, are psychiatrists seeing an increase in addictive behavior? Are you seeing people drinking more? Are they using drugs more? Is this something that's been observed, or is that a significant risk with this stay-at-home order?
It definitely is something that we're worried about, very concerned about, and you certainly hear about it anecdotally, but we haven't really been in this thing long enough to see what it's doing to the populace. And the bigger problem is that the substance abuse resources we have available, they're substance abuse is powerful. It helps better than nothing. Any type of group works best when you're in the same room. It will work if you're sitting in the same group room like we are now, but you lose something in the process. You really do. So I'm very much worried about that. Again, we haven't seen it yet, but I think it's coming.
That's a great observation. So instead of the traditional 12-step meetings such as AA, those have basically evaporated. Those have to completely occur on a virtual level now.
Or by phone. Yes, and we're really worried about that. There are some places that, you know, if you maintain a social distance of 6 feet, you can still have a meeting, a smaller one. But it's still, you know, there's a question on the chat about, you know, what can we, how far can we take this? Should we be leery of getting food from takeout? Anything you do outside of your own body, any walking outdoors, walking down the street, meeting a family member, it has risk. You have to have a risk-benefit ratio. If you're a 15-year-old or an 18-year-old, your risk of getting this and getting sick from it is pretty low. If you're 81 years old, it's a different story. So you need to be different. I have friends that are immunocompromised that really, I mean, we have to be really, really careful about them getting sick. But for us young folk, we can, you know, I am doing takeout. We do get some takeout. I'm trying to do my best to support our community.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, if you make the assumption that, you know, just about everybody and with regards to the virus living on, you know, things that are not natural, if you assume that everybody and everything potentially is a carrier of the virus and that you are included in that, the hand washing, the mask wearing gloves, taking care of food, anything that goes to, you know, hand to mouth needs to make sure that it goes through that chain of decontamination.
Yes. Absolutely.
I think we just have to make those assumptions. The virus is everywhere, on everyone, including you and I, even if we don't have symptoms, and that's going to make us the most responsible that we can.
Yep. And so, you know, if you get food from the takeout, wipe it down, wipe the containers down. and that's you're just going to have to balance the risk with the benefits of getting out and getting something hopefully healthy to eat. There's definitely some healthy takeout out there.
You know, from the standpoint of telehealth, we've just got a couple more minutes left to go. And we mentioned, you know, these are new times, both culturally, but also financially. What should patients as well as providers expect with regards to, you know, the billing and the financial aspects of telehealth? Are there differences? Are patients going to be required to have to spend the same amount of money with a telehealth or virtual visit compared to a normal visit? And are these services covered by, both public as well as commercial payers?
So right now, it's my understanding that all insurance companies from Medicaid up to private commercial insurances have been ordered to cover all health insurance costs without any copays. And so that if it's COVID related, that all insurances are being ordered to pay for everything, that there are no copays and patients don't have to worry about that. In general, telehealth is about equivocal. It's about the same as general psychiatric care in terms of coverage. There's going to obviously be differences between different insurance policies, and I'm afraid I don't know much of the granular details there, but most policies cover telepsychiatry just as much as they do general psychiatric or psychotherapy care. Medicaid may be a little different, and there's differences between the Medicaid programs, and I'm not sure about the answer to that, but I'm reasonably certain right now for sure that will be covered.
Yeah, and you know, my understanding of that question as well is that with the rules being under development before the pandemic sort of hit, it's basically been transposed for physical or live visits onto the telehealth system. So your individual plan would dictate what your copay is and what you would be responsible for. Copays and deductibles are going to be the same during this interim until the full development of telehealth, you know, reimbursement structures is complete.
Yeah, it's going to vary. Right now, we're taking care of everybody, but downstream it's going to be different, a little bit different.
Well, Dr. Patterson, we're wrapping up. Is there anything that you would like to pass on to those folks out there who, you know, are both struggling with, you know, how to get access to their doctor during this, virtual interim period of telehealth emergence, as well as, you know, the psychological impacts of this pandemic?
Sure. A couple things. One, it's really tough right now for those of us who go to their place of worship, whether it's a church or a temple or whatever. But, you know, there are lots of things online that you can do to attend church remotely, whether it's through Facebook or whether it's through a live video feed or through Zoom or whatever. I would encourage you to do that with, you know, the church or temple or house of worship or your preference. If you do think that you need help, please get help. And so our phone number in our clinic is 318-626-2445. And, you know, please call us and we'll be happy to help if we can. If you need help, get help. Come to the hospital if you need help. I mean, that risk-benefit ratio is really important. If you are taking medications and you're too scared to come in and get refills, that suicide risk is going to be there. And so we're really worried about that. So call us or come in.
That's Dr. James Patterson, professor and chair of psychiatry and behavioral health services here at Ochsner LSU Health Sciences Center. I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and I sincerely appreciate you joining us this evening for this special edition of Health Matters. You can find updates on coronavirus for Louisiana, Arkansas, and Texas on our homepage at redriverradio.org. You can also find a podcast of this show and other Health Matters episodes on our website. Views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not reflect those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its staff. The producer of Health Matters is Renee Moran. We thank Mr. Kermit Poling and Wally Derleth for their assistance this evening. This program has been made possible in part by the Noel Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Tune in next week as we bring you another update on the COVID-19 global pandemic. Thank you. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer.
I don't know a soul who's not been battered. I don't have a friend who feels at ease. I don't know a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. Ah, but it's all right. It's all right. For we've lived so well, so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. Can't help but I wonder what's gone wrong. And I dreamed I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose unexpectedly, looking back down at me, smiled.